This is the Minding Your Own Business podcast, brought to you by Elder Research. Each episode, we'll bring in data and analytics gurus from around the world as they regale us with their data analytics stories and enlighten us with their secrets for how to turn data into actionable insights. Now, here's our host, Evan Wimpy, who will guide us as we dare to mine our own business.
Hello, and welcome to the Minding Your Own Business podcast. This is episode 2. We have survived past episode 1. Can you believe it? I'm excited today to introduce Alex Cunningham, who's the manager for advanced analytics at Church & Dwight. Alex has a pretty long tenure there at Church & Dwight, which we'll get into here in just a moment. He has a bachelor's in economics from the College of New Jersey and an MS in data science from Northwestern University. Alex, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming.
Oh, it's an honor and a privilege to be here with you, Evan. This is really making my day today. I'm so excited.
Fantastic. You are selling it well, sir. Why don't you give us a little bit about your background? You've spent quite a bit of time at Church & Dwight, some of that in analytics, some of that outside of the space of analytics. So maybe just talk about sort of your career trajectory there. And actually maybe you do a quick introduction of Church & Dwight as well. Some folks probably don't realize that they know Church & Dwight, but there's a lot of familiar brands there. So maybe just talk a little bit about who Church & Dwight is.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Church & Dwight is a fantastic company who many people may not have heard of, but have probably heard of our brands. We're the parent company to Arm & Hammer. We also own Trojan, First Response, Batiste, Dry Shampoo, Arm & Hammer Cat Litter, of course, our laundry detergent as well. We make about 54 different consumer brands, most of which are sold here in the United States, but our international footprint is growing and expanding very rapidly, and we're really excited about what that means for, you know, the future of this company and what data science and analytics can do for us, to fulfill those goals.
Awesome. Yeah. Big company, big footprint for sure. Can you talk a little bit about your history there? You haven't always been in data science and analytics.
Absolutely. So, you know, really fortunate to work for an organization that really believes in investing in those that work for them and providing opportunities to really grow cross-functionally. And so I've benefited from coming in here as a co-op while I was still a student, which turned into my first career here at Church & Dwight, working in the back end of SAP systems with our IT group. I matured from that into some business analytics, is what we were calling it at the time. I then had an opportunity to jump over to finance, which was fantastic. Spent a couple years over on the business side, really learning how we really operate and how we conduct our analyses and the different processes that actually drive the business, having been kind of on more of the data and analytics side, making systems and processes work. And so when an opportunity opened up and Church & Dwight decided to create an analytics center of excellence team, it was a fantastic opportunity to combine my experiences in, you know, the IT side of the world with, you know, some of the great business insights and context that I had learned with our finance group. And so I could not have been any more fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. And have now been on the team since about 2017 now. And we continue to grow and mature because analytics and data science is certainly a journey. One that we are in our early stages of, but are, you know, rapidly making great progress.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I wouldn't say it's rare necessarily, but I think it's overlooked how valuable it can be to come from the business and understand how the business functions into this analytics role instead of just the analytics background and never having worked outside of analytics within the company. So I think that's a pretty valuable vantage point to have. You mentioned the Analytics Center of Excellence. Can you talk about sort of where that sits within Church & Dwight, sort of how that structure looks?
Absolutely. So at Church & Dwight, our Analytics Center of Excellence team serves as an internal consulting group or partner for our various business units. And what we really want to do is, for a very long time, we have run our business very successfully, but with a very much focus on the qualitative. And now what we're going to be able to do with this Analytics Center of Excellence group is complement that qualitative understanding of our business with a quantitative one. And if we can put those things together, the types of business decisions and insight we'll be able to generate will really start to move us forward into becoming that analytical competitor, right? That everybody's chasing.
Yeah, that's great. That's the goal for sure. Maybe we try to understand a little bit how that works. You're an internal consulting group. I work for a consulting team as well. We have to go out to people and ask, hey, do you need this? Do you need this service? I'm curious how much within your analytics center of excellence are you pulling from like the operations team or the marketing team, or are they coming to you with a need? Like, hey, we've got this data, we have this problem, we need some help with this.
Oh, that's a really great question. And, you know, it's really evolved over time here. As our group was really first becoming established and setting ourselves up within the organization, it was a lot more pulling folks in, having to go out and ask them for, to partner with us and really bring them into our circle. And now, what's really great is as we've established ourselves, we don't have to do as much of that pulling in. They are coming in themselves because they're hearing of the successes and the wins that the organization is gaining, and they want to be a part of that too. And that's so exciting. You know, one of the phrases we've been throwing around is a P.T. Barnum expression, which is nothing draws a crowd quite like a crowd. And in data science and analytics, we want to really try and use that to our advantage. Let's get excited about this stuff. It's really cool and it's really useful. We don't want to overhype it either, but you know, this is something to get pretty excited about. This is some cutting edge, you know, forward thinking type of stuff. And how cool is that?
Yeah, that's a great quote. I love the P.T. Barnum quote here. You've got a bit of a crowd. You're not doing as much pulling. How did you, so you're a relatively new team. I think you said 2017 you were established. So how did you get some of those early wins? And maybe you can talk about, I don't know if you want to get into specifics on a project or maybe just sort of the mindset on how do you choose some of these early projects to try to get that initial crowd, to try to build some momentum there.
Absolutely. That's a really great question. You know, one of the things that we have really spent a lot of time thinking about is how to prioritize our analytics projects and efforts. And, you know, it's interesting that although how we source them, right, that push versus pull has changed a bit, how we go about prioritizing them has not. And I think that's been a really consistent theme. So the way we think about it is really kind of as a triage system. The first aspect is, are there any major fires going on? Right. As a new group, right, we were very fortunate that there were not. Right. So we could skip that aspect of the triage. But I do mention that because, you know, events like COVID, right, really came in and, you know, affected not only Church and Dwight, but, you know, the world. Right. And so when there's those kinds of major events like that, you know, obviously that really sort of adjusts our priority list, so to say. However, barring any sort of major global phenomenon, we really start to prioritize our work based on the outcomes that those experiments are going to provide. And that's what we actually call the work that we do. We call them experiments. And the reason we phrase it that way is that sometimes they don't work. These are new areas that we're investigating. We're lifting up these little rocks and trying to see what sorts of nuggets or insights we might find. And, you know, unfortunately, right, sometimes we turn over a rock and there's not really anything there. And that's okay, so long as we are, you know, sort of failing fast, so to say, and not trying to do too much. And that's another aspect of how we do that prioritization. So when we look at those outcomes, we also consider the complexity in deriving that outcome. Because if we find too much complexity, what we try and do is really borrow from agile methods and break that complexity down into some smaller components that can get worked on a little bit more succinctly. Because one thing we hear from executives a whole lot is we do not want to boil the ocean, right? And in data science, that can be easy to do, especially in the big data type environment or world. And in fact, some data science teams really want to boil the ocean, in fact. And so we got to kind of make sure that, you know, to prevent those types of things, we're prioritizing the work that has the most, you know, meaningful outcomes. And those outcomes can be dollars, but those outcomes might also be things like efficiency or future learnings that set us up down the line to do bigger and better things. And so that's a little bit about how we think about, you know, prioritization when it comes to analytics.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And I love the terminology of experiment. It's really, really is data science. You really need to conduct these experiments. That's a good mindset, especially if you can get some synergy, you get some agreement on this is an experiment and there's not a certainty that we'll achieve this outcome. We're really exploring here. So let me ask you, if when you lift up the rock and there is something interesting, you can improve a process or save some money or have a better forecast there. Can you talk about the steps your team takes to try to get that implemented once you've done the experiment and you have some good data science tool or model or product? How do you get that into production?
Oh, that's a great question. And you know, that is the hardest part of data science. You know, I believe your previous guest, Gerhard, had touched on this just a little bit, in that the modeling, the big secret here, you know, you don't want to say the quiet part out loud too often, but the modeling is actually the, you know, most straightforward piece of all of this. The change management and the implementation of that solution and embedding that into process, embedding that into systems, is where a lot more of the complexity and time and attention is spent. And so just to talk a little bit about that, you know, we've started to try and break that, any process we do from an experiments standpoint, down into a couple of critical components. The first thing that we do is we always ensure that we have the data we need at the onset. Sometimes, right, it's really easy to just jump right into and get excited about some problem statement. And then you get into your, you know, data understanding, following that good old crisp DM framework, and you realize that, oh, I don't even have the data there to answer this question. And so, you know, having learned some of those lessons early on in our experience, we really wanted to make sure that we always start with a data assessment and having that data first. And one of the ways that we do that is that we actually ensure that not only do we have a data set, but we ensure that that data set is accessible in a self-service fashion via dashboard or other methodology to the business units and analysts themselves. And why is that, right? Because we want to be a prescriptive group. We don't want to necessarily be looking backwards. So it sounds a little counterintuitive. But what it does is, by giving analysts that data up front, they're able to ask deeper questions. If I can quickly, as an analyst, answer who, what, where, and when, looking backwards, did something happen, I start to ask myself why. And those why questions are what really lead to great data science experiments or models. And so we start with the data access. We grant that access via dashboard or visualization or some other self-service means. That sets us up now to start doing those data science experiments. And once we actually create some sort of data science asset, right, a model or you know, some sort of analytical framework for answering a question, really what we then want to do is actually take a bit of a pause and treat that solution almost as a semi-finished good, right? Coming from the manufacturing space, right? The data is our raw materials and the model is a semi-finished good. Well, the thing about a semi-finished good, right, is it semi is the opportune word there. We need to take that all the way to completion. And to do that, to make our finished product, what we've started to call that phase is operationalization of our models. And that operationalization is really where we define the processes and the workflows, in a lean sort of sense, right? Developing standard work and train the analyst community on how to conduct that standard work or what these new processes would be, figure out the on-ramps to integrating this solution with existing systems and architecture. And we treat that really as a wholly separate effort from this experimental piece that we conduct up front. And it's really because it does take so much time and attention and is such a different animal that, we treat it as such. And so, that's just a little bit on how we start to think about implementing the things that we do so that they don't turn up and be shelfware, right? Nothing is more sad than when you create a really great solution and it just gets put up on a shelf up here. And it's interesting and it might be really insightful, but it never makes its way back off that shelf. And we want to try and make products data products, right? That don't end up on shelves, but end up on users' hands.
Yeah, that's great. That's for the academics. Let them do the interesting stuff just to be interesting. I think it's a really useful tool to try to give that analyst that's sitting within the business the dashboard to try to give them the descriptive information and help let them sort of ask the why questions, let them develop the business question that you need to answer. And presumably that helps on the back end. So once you've got the semi-finished good and you're ready to productionalize it, and it's going to change the way that analyst does their job or that business makes decision. Well, they were helping on the front end too. So they're more prepared to implement the change on the back end.
Absolutely. And the other thing with that I think is an important aspect is it really makes our business partners true partners, right? Nobody wants to, especially in this space, data science and analytics can be scary. Folks can be concerned that they're going to be replaced by some algorithm that they're not, right? That is not a good way to do business or think about this. Folks might be a little bit intimidated about their own skill set or lack of knowledge perhaps or experience in math or statistics, but that's what becomes important in having this group be that real partner to say, oh, you don't have to worry about those aspects. We'll take care of those pieces. You provide the context, provide that subject matter expertise, provide how you're going to use this to make an actual decision. And we'll worry about some of the mathematical intricacies or other aspects. And so to let people know that you're here to provide them an insight and not provide them the direct answer or, some crystal ball that's going to do everything for them is really important context in dealing with these groups.
Yeah, that's great. That's really important context for sure. And so let me ask you then about your team specifically. So you've got your relatively new analytics center of excellence. You've got a handful. I'm not sure if you're okay to mention how big the team is right now that actually sit in the analytics center of excellence that need to build this rapport and help deliver the dashboards and then do the experimentation and push this semi-finished good out and focus on both the technical and this change management aspect. That's a lot to focus on when you're hiring for your team or you're looking for talent for your team, internally or externally. What are some of the things that you try to key in on for that team?
Absolutely. It sounds a little counterintuitive, but the most important aspect that we hire for is really humility. Because as we just mentioned, and a lot of people are shocked when they hear that, right? Because you expect, R or Python or some tool or technology, right? And those are important as well, right? Don't get me wrong. However, empathy and humility, right, very two closely related traits are what allow us to become those good partners to folks in the business in that internal consulting type capacity. We are we're humble enough to admit that we're not the experts here. We might be pretty good at some of the math and some of the modeling, but when it comes to making business decisions, that is what these folks do for a living. And so we want to be respectful of that. And being humble in that approach is what allows us to be that good partner. And you know, the close cousin of humility is empathy. And that empathy allows us to understand when folks are having hesitation because they're uncomfortable about the context or some aspect of the experiment. It also allows us to do that kind of really good planning for operationalizing our data asset once we've created it. Because by understanding where they're coming from, how they want to use it, the ways that they are thinking about these decisions, and putting ourselves in their shoes, that allows us to better design those sorts of end pieces or end states, if you will. And so those to me are the critical components of this team. Everything else is going to come second to that. Again, some important aspects, right? We got to also be fairly good with and mindful of our math, and it really is applied math, you know, using computers at scale. Those human characteristics and those human traits are really what are most important to us here, and what are going to allow us to grow and develop as an organization.
Yeah, that's great, and generate a lot of that buy-in and that teamwork that you really shoot for, getting the business to come to you to ask, hey, help us solve this problem. And I don't know that this is fair to say, but my intuition is that the humility makes for a better technical data scientist too. When you're exploring data and you're willing to question your intuition or question what you're seeing in the data, and you're a little bit skeptical of maybe your results or what you've seen just in exploratory analysis, I feel like those two things would go hand in hand.
Oh, very much so. And it's also lends itself to a little bit of that natural inquisitiveness that we also tend to find in the data science group. These are folks who for, you know, a very long time have always wondered why something works or how does that actually work. And, you know, might have tinkered as a little kid, for example, taking computers apart and putting them back together, or toasters, or anything you get your hands on, right? That kind of that engineering-like mindset, is also something that, you know, is important and allows you to, as you're being empathetic around, well, what have I not considered or what might I not know myself? You have that natural curiosity to go be that lifelong learner, that self-starter who then goes out and says, well, I'm going to go ahead and read up on that just a little bit.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, Alex, I want to ask you one last question. You've talked a bit about how projects get prioritized, how you help productionalize or operationalize a data science product that has been built. Putting that to the side, it's just the Alex Cunningham show. You've got your easy button and everybody is aligned to your vision, and whatever your focus is, the business problem, the thing that you want to solve, everybody's on board and they have the exact same vision that you have. So given that unrealistic scenario, what's the type of problem you want to tackle? Where do you put your data science effort?
So that's a really interesting question. And the way I think about that maybe might be a little bit different in that I believe if, you know, I could snap my fingers and have any kind of, you know, behavior change or project come to fruition, it would really be this. It would be creating time or more time, I should say, for our data science teams to learn. To be comfortable with providing time to do that type of self-learning. One of the things that Gerhard mentioned that I think is really important is that idea of being a lifelong learner, and good data scientists and good data science groups really embrace that learning aspect. And so one thing that'd be great is to, you know, devote real time, real resource allocation to really just true learning. And heard a really interesting fact at a talk the other day that, you know, do you know what how often the average paper, academic paper, is read?
24 times.
Well, maybe by their family and loved ones, or a parent who's really really trying to support them, right? Well, you know, the sad thing is that on average, those articles are only read about 3 times. And so think about the amount of learning out there and sort of the reinvention of the wheel, if you will, that is going on because stuff is out there and just not being consumed or read or talked about as much. And so, you know, imagine you could take a data science team and, you know, bring that number up from 3 articles to 6. You know, let's not go too crazy here. What might that do for an organization? That to me is a bet worth making, and something that, you know, we ourselves here at Church and Dwight and on this team are going to try and start to devote more time to, because we feel that by doing that, all these other projects and things will flow from it.
That is a fantastic answer, and I feel fortunate for your team. I hope you're able to carve out at least some time. Probably not as much as you want, but I hope you're able to carve out some time that they're able to do that and get those readership and citation up on some of those academic journals. Alex, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come here and chat with us. It's been super useful, super helpful. Alex Cunningham, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. This has been an honor and a privilege, and really looking forward to, you know, doing more in the data science space and really helping to be a good partner to transform our organization, an organization that I very much love, into you know, our future analytical competitor selves.
Fantastic. Alex Cunningham, thanks so much. Thanks for listening, everyone. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to like, subscribe, multiply, and divide, and we'll see you next time on the Minding Your Own Business podcast. So back with Alex Cunningham for a quick joke that he hopes to tell. Alex, you've got a statistics joke for us?
Oh, absolutely. So, hey, Evan, you've asked me a lot of questions, so I have a little bit of a question for you. Okay. Why was 4 afraid to ask 5 out on a date?
Couldn't tell you.
Well, unfortunately, 4 was 2 squared.
Oh, Alex, some numerical humor. There we go.
Hey, I'll keep my day job, but you know, hey, we always got to have a little bit of fun with it, right?